This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 74, recorded on July 10th, 2017. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and on this week's episode, we're going to briefly run down the week's worth of action on the field. We'll preview the All-Star break that we are forced to endure. We'll look at some unfortunate, but fortunately timed injuries. We'll take a quick look around the AL Central. We'll marvel at Jose Ramirez's rapid rise to being everybody's favorite player. And of course, we'll take your questions. Before we get into all that, I want to thank everybody listening live now or on Facebook or wherever or whenever you're tuning in. Please remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, YouTube, or wherever you do listen to your favorite podcast. Consider leaving a review. It all helps us. So, Jason Lukart, as always, is here to join me. So, Jason, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm back after a week in the woods of northern Michigan with minimal internet. So, I'm glad to be home.
That is the equivalent of just going, I guess, in the middle of nowhere, which is literally what it is if you don't have internet anymore, I guess.
Yeah, I've discovered I could go. It's much easier for me to be without, like, TV than it is internet. I don't know what that says about me, but I'm not proud of it, but boy, I missed it.
Wait, like cable TV you still watch?
Oh, yeah, we're still plugged in.
Oh, I had to plug mine in for the first time to watch the game on Sunday night. It was basically torture, which is also sad that I still pay for it. But I still have it for, like, the playoffs and the one time a year the Indians are on national TV.
I watch enough TV shows. I don't feel like fussing with, like, Hulu and Amazon and the 8 different streaming things that would be required to keep up with all the TV shows I watch.
Yeah, if you watch enough, it's not worth it to juggle all of them. Did you happen to watch either the Fox or ESPN one? Because if you didn't know, the Indians were back-to-back national broadcast games. Well, I guess the Fox one was regional, but both games, in a way, were on national television compared to when they're usually not. So, did you watch either of them?
I got to see about 3 innings of Indians baseball last week.
So then, yes, of course you did. But you missed one of the most annoying broadcasters ever on Saturday. I don't know if you maybe heard about it or anything, but Billy Ripken, he sort of hates baseball. I've got the whole idea of listening to him. It was everything he complained about. It was the replay system. It was how long batters take. It was the way batters swing. It was, I don't know, that guy just does not like the sport, and yet he's paid to talk about it. It was kind of fascinating.
I wonder if he resents the fact that he was nowhere near as good as his brother. It's got to be tough to do the same thing as a sibling and be, like,
just awful at it.
In the grand scheme of the world, a great baseball player because you're good enough to make the majors, but in the grand scheme of being compared to your brother, you were garbage.
That might make you dislike the sport just a little bit, but when you get that far, I mean, I guess he's already in baseball. So if he does truly hate baseball, he's kind of stuck in it now. So I don't know. Maybe he was just nervous and could only point out bad things to talk about. But anyway, the Indians did play a bunch of games last week. They were 1-2 against the Padres, 2-1 against the Tigers. And I know you said you didn't watch a whole lot of them. But Bradley Zimmer, he's looking really good. I think we talked about him the last podcast a few weeks ago. That was mainly about how fast he is. But in the last week especially, he made a bunch of diving catches. I think there was 2-1 game, and there were 2-2 separate other games. And the kid is just all over the field. He's running the bases great. And Mike Voris on Facebook, he asked, what's the long-term plan for Zimmer? Hope it's a permanent spot. I do definitely think that's what it is. I can't imagine it's worth manipulating his service time anymore, if they even can. I don't know, without getting into trouble at this point, because he's been so good. But, I mean, there's no reason not to start him, even if he wasn't batting well. He plays defense, he runs the bases. So I cannot imagine Bradley Zimmer is anything but the starting center fielder now, which is great to know that the Indians have a starting center fielder, so. Have you been impressed with him? I know you didn't watch him the last week in particular,
yeah,
but
when I've watched in the last month, his defense has really impressed me. I feel like most of the reports I read on him coming up were, like, you know, adequate defense, but not necessarily spectacular. So the defense has been better than I expected. And he's been an above average hitter, which for a rookie is, I think, a pretty good bar to clear. So yeah, he's been really impressive. Hopefully he holds up better than Tyler Naquin did last year. But, you know, he was a better prospect, a more highly regarded prospect. So I think the odds of him being able to keep it up are better than they were for Naquin.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing, is that Naquin was a surprise and Zimmer really isn't. He's just playing to what he was pretty much supposed to be. And the Indians fans have kind of been spoiled, because, I mean, they had Francisco Lindor as a rookie. He hit extremely well. Tyler Naquin hit extremely well. And on Bradley Zimmer's hitting pretty well, so eventually there's going to be a rookie that comes up and isn't amazing right now. I guess Yandy Diaz was that rookie, but we're going to have to adjust our expectations just a little bit. Every rookie's been great lately, it seems like, but it's not gonna happen forever. And about Zimmer's defense, from what I remember, the most reports were that he wasn't great at reading the ball, which he isn't now either, but he catches up to it so well every time. Like, a couple of those diving catches were because he read the ball while he took a wrong step, but then he's just so fast and he can dive to everything. So I don't think scouts either knew how fast he was or knew or didn't think it would translate to the majors or something, but I think everybody underestimated his speed.
Yeah, I certainly did. I did not. I mean, he's, you know, when we talked about him a couple of weeks ago, is in the context of him having a race against that the guy in Atlanta, the Freeze or whatever his name is. And I stand by what I said, that Zimmer's not going to outrun a, you know, NCAA champion sprinter or whatever that guy is. But Zimmer's speed is no joke.
Yeah, it's one of the fastest in the league. It was the last time I saw it was measured. It was like 0.10 or was a 10th of a foot slower than, it was either Hamilton or Buxton, one of the fastest guys. He's just barely slower than it's crazy how fast he is. Brian Shaddix in the comments says, Zimmer probably wouldn't let that ball drop in the World Series. First of all, too soon. Second of all, probably not, I guess. We'll never know, but
mostly too soon,
mostly too soon. And also we'll never know. The other thing I want to talk about from these games is that the rotation, which just involves another rookie. I don't want to always talk about rookies, but I like rookie. Well, I don't know if is Clevenger still a rookie. I don't know if he's a young player, but either way, I think he's pitched his way into the starting rotation. His last three games, which I mean, it's more than three games, but I'm picking three out of convenience. It was the Rangers, Tigers, and Tigers again. Six innings each game. He allowed two hits, and three hits, and then one earned run in two of the games, and then nothing else. Struck out, 20 altogether in those three games. So he's been amazing lately. His ERA is at 3 right now. His FIP's a little higher just because of his walks. But he's been really good. Merritt Rolfing kind of called it with his post back in June after the Indians demoted him the first time, that Clevenger was kind of unlucky. He had a string of starts where he was really bad. I think he had like, what was it? Like 12 earned runs over three starts. He wasn't very good. He had like 5 in the one. He walked a bunch of players. And Merritt kind of noted that he was just unlucky. The balls were getting through the field. He had a really high BABIP. And then Clevenger dominated in AAA, came back up, and now he's really good again. He's got an outstanding curveball. And one of the things I noticed about him the most, just kind of skimming over stats, when you look at weighted pitch values on FanGraphs, he's one of a very few pitchers that has positive everything, which basically means that the runs above average for his pitches are better. They're at least above average, or in the positives. They're not negatives. They don't hurt him. So even Corey Kluber, who has the absolute best curveball and is an amazing pitcher, he has a fastball worth -4 runs above average. So most pitchers have at least one pitch that's really not working for him, but at least based on that metric and a limited quantity or a limited sample size, of course, but that's one big reason why he's been good. It's like all his pitches are working. He gets them for strikeouts. He allows a lot of walks still, but when he gets that figured out, I think he's going to take over Tomlin. Just this rotation is not going to stay the way it is forever, I don't think. I don't even know if Salazar is going to come back and win his spot. I think he might be going to the bullpen because Clevenger has just squeezed his way in there. But it's going to be interesting coming up. I think the rotation is going to be changed one way or the other because of Tomlin's struggles. Even Sean Morimondo in AAA has been really good lately. He pitched 3 out of his 4 games were complete game shutouts in AAA, so he might get a shot. Of course, Ryan Merritt's always hovering around. So the rotation has been interesting all year long. It was weak for a while. It's strong now, and It's just interesting going forward watching the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought for a while that Salazar probably ends up in the bullpen. You know, with Clevenger pitching well, certainly it would be justifiable with Salazar's health issues to say you're moving to the bullpen, not as a demotion, but just kind of to keep him healthy. If they view Salazar as a starter still, I think Salazar comes back ahead of Bauer and Tomlin. I think Tomlin's probably the guy pushed out, which makes sense, although I'm not really much more impressed with Bauer than I am with Tomlin. But I also know part of that is just I find Bauer irritating, and so I'm prone to judging him negatively.
Biased, Jason.
Bauer deserves to be ahead of Tomlin, but not by as much as I think a lot of people maybe.
Really? So you think they're pretty close together?
Yeah.
I would have Bauer quite a bit ahead of Tomlin. Even with all the strikeouts?
All the strikeouts, but all of the walks too. Like the inability to finish six innings most of the time. Like, he's not a good pitcher. They're both basically number five starters. They just do it a little differently. But I don't – the fact that Bauer can strike a bunch of guys out and have results that are basically as bad as Tomlin's does – for me, the strikeouts don't change the fact that the results aren't really any better.
But, Jason, he executes his pitches. I've heard him every game. He says it. He executed them. Yeah, that's where he wanted him to go.
Since I find him irritating.
And I think it's that he gets them where he wants them. They're just not good pitches. There's two aspects of throwing a good pitch there. You locate it and you throw a good pitch. He's just throwing garbage to good spots sometimes. And
yeah.
He just gets hammered way too often.
Either way, I think you're right about Clevinger. I mean, I don't think you can move him out of the rotation right now. I mean, if he gets shelled three or four times or something, then that changes. But right now I think Clevinger definitely stays in the rotation.
I hope it wouldn't change after getting shelled three times. Tomlin's been shelled how many times and he's still there? I mean, as long as he's still showing something, I would think he's there for a little while. Until Salazar comes back, I guess. If I can't imagine Tomlin going down and then replacing Clevinger again. That'd just be a cycle of pain I would not want to go through. So anything that you observed in your three innings of watching the Indians or what you read in the last week? Or even further than that, the last month since the last time you recorded.
I mean, one of the things we talked about before, and I've said before, like, the AL Central is just a pretty crummy division. The Indians have not played especially well, yet they sit in first place. Pecota has them with a pretty high confidence for winning the division, despite a sort of small lead right now. I think Pecota's got them as 91% to win the Central. So they're benefiting from lousy competition, but I don't care. That doesn't bother me at all. They've got plenty of time to get their act together and sort of hopefully kind of be firing on all cylinders by the time October rolls around.
Yeah, not to make it a cocky thing, but I mean, if the Indians don't win, no matter who else wins, that's an upset, isn't it? I mean, nobody expects the Twins to win. If the Royals do, I guess it's kind of their big comeback tour, but anybody at the Indians winning is a surprise at this point.
Yep.
In the Royals, I mean, they looked like sellers for a while. They won a bunch of games, and now all of a sudden they want to go for it, which I wrote about it last week. If they want to do that, I am all for it. Please, Royals, go all in. Keep everything you have. Maybe deal your one good prospect for another piece to try to go for it. I am all for that, because after the season, I mean, Eric Hosmer, Mike Moustakas, Alcides Escobar, Lorenzo Cain, Jason Vargas, they're all unrestricted free agents. So that team is done after this year, no matter what. And they've had, I think the last good draft was, what was it, several years ago before they won the World Series. And since then, it was all been bust in the first round. Bubba Starling is not even a prospect anymore. The recent drafts haven't been very good either. They haven't made any good trades to restock the farm. So the only way they're going to compete in like the next 4 to 5 years is sell. And if they don't sell now, they're screwing themselves for a long time. So I am all for that, Royals. For the next month, I'm going to buy a Royals jersey and wear it. And I'm going to just try to send messages to their GM that you got this. You can do it. Don't sell. Go all in. Are you a Royals fan too, Jason? You should be.
I refuse context to categorize myself as a Royals fan.
You can cross your fingers behind your back when you say it if you want. But you have to be for now.
I don't know if you're familiar with Randy Gisarelli, who is one of the co-founders of Baseball Prospectus and has done a lot of really good baseball writing over the years, but his day job is he's a dermatologist, a skin doctor, who happens to have an office in my hometown. And so a couple weeks ago, I dropped by his office just to kind of talk baseball with him for a few minutes and asked him, because he's a Royals fan, and asked him how he felt. And he said, you know, like, at any point in my life as a Royals fan in this situation, I would be desperate for them just to trade everyone, rebuild, you know. They're probably not going to win this year. And just like you said, they're setting themselves up for five bad years, and I wouldn't have wanted that. He's like, but, you know, they won the World Series, and I find I just don't – I care in a different way now. And he was basically saying, maybe this team, maybe this core has one more crazy run in them. If they don't, so be it. They still won the World Series, you know, 2 years ago, so what do I care? I would really like to have that kind of carefree – what happens, happens attitude about the Indians, and I blame the Cubs.
I do wonder how long that afterglow lasts. I imagine like the Phillies are over it now, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's
gonna last a little while.
Some people it's gonna last almost not at all, and some people like they'll be satisfied for life. They got to see it once. I also feel like the older you are, the longer it's likely to last because you suffered longer. So the satisfaction of seeing it end is greater and probably provides longer relief, I would think.
Yeah, and also when you're older, time seems to go faster. So when you're young, like a year between World Series is a ton. But when you're getting older, that's nothing. So I think it's, yeah, like you said, when you get older, it lasts a little bit. The satisfaction lasts a little bit longer, I think. But maybe it goes like the current core. Like maybe once this group of Royals are gone, that'll fade away. Because that's what happened with the Phillies, I guess. Like, it's like when Ryan Howard left, that core was done completely. And maybe that's when that faded for them. I don't know. I would like to know that feeling sooner rather than later. And another thing about your story, it's always interesting to me that baseball writers who do a ton of work online and all you know about is their baseball writing, you later find out they have like regular J jobs. Like, wow, really? You do all this baseball writing? And say, no, all I know you for is baseball writing, yet you're a dermatologist during the day, which is always really interesting.
Yeah, and I think he had offers to work full-time in baseball. But he's got a successful practice and, you know, a family and stuff like that. And I think he felt like it just wasn't quite enough of a sure thing to last long enough to justify sort of giving up his medical career for.
Yeah, you're going to be in demand as a dermatologist more than you'll be something in baseball, I'm sure. So I couldn't blame him for that. So anything else about the AL Central? We're going to talk about it later, but we'll just do it now. I mean, like we said, the Indians, the leader.
Yeah, I mean, weeks ago, the Tigers were the team I was most worried about, but the Indians beat up on them, and I can't fathom the Tigers could consider themselves buyers. I think they're sort of out of the running at this point. So, yeah, I mean, if it's not the Indians, it's going to be the Royals or Twins. I feel like the Royals are a better team than the Twins, not by a huge amount, though. I'd rather be in the Twins' position just because they're younger, but, like, for just – the rest of this season with the current roster, I think the Royals are a little better. The Indians ought to win this division. Like, even if the Indians were three games back right now, I'd feel like the Indians are going to win the division. So,
at one point that was the case. They were like three games back and we still felt like they were going to win.
Yep, exactly.
It's just such an easy division.
Yeah.
I've still got my bets on the Twins, though, that they're going to be at least second, not first. But I guess even if the Royals don't sell, I still think even if they don't sell, they're going to fade out at the end, and the Twins are going to somehow stumble into winning record. I'm riding that to the end. I don't care how long the Twins are going to be bad.
If the Royals don't sell, I'll take the Royals finishing ahead of the Twins, but we'll see what the Royals decide to do.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't mention the White Sox. Do we need to? No. I don't think so.
No.
Although I did see their ridiculous demand for Jose Quintana was like Clint Frazier and Gleyber Torres from the Yankees, so they're doing real good with that, the whole trading.
Well, to the White Sox credit for... As someone who's lived most of their life in or very close to Chicago, I know more about the White Sox than probably any team other than the Indians. They have probably the best farm system I can remember them having. So I think the White Sox would be a team to worry about in 3 years or so.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, it would be nice to trade Quintana, but if they're going to make the ridiculous demands, maybe they won't. I don't know. He's under control for a couple more years, isn't he? So it's not like they have to right now. Like,
there's sort of no reason not to kind of shoot high for now. He's a good player with control for a while. If they don't get an offer they like right now, they can shop him again in the offseason and shop him again 12 months from now.
So some less fun things to talk about besides the Indians just trampling over the AL Central. Well, they'll start trampling soon anyway. Some injuries. Lenny Chisenhall had a right calf injury. Apparently cramped up running the bases. If he goes in the DL, it'll be his third trip of the season. He previously went on for shoulder sprain and concussion symptoms. Jason Kipnis, he was, why am I blanking what his was? Hamstring, and he could be out for like a month, I think the last I saw. He's on the 10-day DL, but of course that can be repeated or extended. But for now, he's on 10-day. It is kind of nice they both got injured right before the All-Star break. That helps. Matt McPhee on Facebook, he wanted to know, if Kipnis' injury is prolonged, what infield configuration would you like to see? Eric Gonzalez at second, J Ram at second, and Yandy at third base. Gio, meaning Giovanni Urshela, at third. I think what we saw yesterday, if Kipnis is out, that's going to be it. It's Jose Ramirez at third and Eric Gonzalez at second. I don't know if you really want to shift everyone over just to get Giovanni Urshela's glove at third when his bat is terrible. I think Eric Gonzalez is good enough at second to leave him there. That's a really good left side of the defense. Ramirez, Lindor, and Gonzalez. So if Kipnis is out for a while, I think Gonzalez is a perfectly fine replacement for a little while. I don't see him trading a second baseman or a third baseman just because of the injury. Maybe if they thought before they could upgrade Kipnis, but not just because he has a hamstring injury.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm fully aware that Jose Ramirez is probably going to be just fine no matter where he's playing, but there is some part of me that just feels like things have been going so well since he's been the everyday third baseman, and just like kind of leave him there and not mess with what he's got going on, when the difference between, you know, whether it's Gonzalez at second or Diaz at third or Shell at third or, you know, whatever else you would come up with, I think you're talking about pretty minor differences between them. So, yeah, I think I would leave everyone where they are and rotate guys through second base.
Yeah, and Kipnis's injury, it seems like it's horrible because it's a month. But as Brandon Bauer is a friend of the podcast, and the comment said, the biggest concern for Kipnis going forward is hamstring injuries can be recurrent. Rehab for all three isn't too tough, just takes time. So it's not like it's a devastating injury. It's just a hamstring strain, so he'll probably be out for a month, but then it's probably not too intensive rehab, and then he'll just be back and ready to go. What was his injury? And I should have looked it up beforehand, but in spring training, was it another hamstring, or was that something else? I'm completely blanking on what it was.
But, you know, if the Indians come out of the All-Star break and go like 6-13 over the next 3 weeks, I guess things change, but again, you can eliminate probably any two players you want, and they still should win the Central.
Yeah, they can go 6-13 and still be in the lead, probably.
So I feel like they just, you know, don't rush anyone back. Don't do anything out of panic. They're not going to catch the Astros, so the idea of having home field in the postseason, which to the extent that it even matters, isn't going to happen. Just hold the lead, get everyone healthy, you know, by a couple weeks before the postseason so everyone's, you know, up and running, and see what happens. I wouldn't rush anyone back.
Yeah, there's no reason to. And Brandon says in the comments it was a rotator cuff was Kipnis's thing. So at least it's not the same thing, not another hamstring injury. And then, yeah, the thing with Chisenhall is just that he was so hot. It's unfortunate that he goes down. He's one of the Indians' best hitter, which is something that hasn't happened a whole lot, but he's finally maybe coming into his form. I think we talked about this the last podcast, so he's been really good for a while now, and now he's unfortunately injured, so we'll see how long he's going to be out soon. The other thing, I can't remember if we talked about it, but a lot of Indians players having babies right now, which is conspicuously around 10 months after they clinched the the American League after winning the championship series. The kind of timing babies to events thing is always creepy to me, but it happened. I mean, there's like four Indians players who had to go away to tend to newborn babies. There was Carlos. Who else was it? I remember it was Santana. And there were a couple others, but it's just a very funny coincidence that they all did it at the same time.
Good for them. They deserve to celebrate winning the division.
Yeah, of course. And they deserve to have the time off to go see their kids, too. And their newborn. Okay. I would never care. Even if
as someone who took 6 weeks off work when their child was born, I'm not going to regret someone missing six games.
You slacker, Jason. How could you? Yeah, I'll never get that. Like, it's fine for everybody else to take time off, and it's fine for baseball players. They're people, too. Speaking of baseball players being people, I want to talk about one of my favorite baseball player people, Jose Ramirez. Zach Mizell of Cleveland.com, who just to, I don't know, Cleveland has a lot of great sports writers, I think. Not maybe on the national level, but there's a bunch of great little small ones. But for somebody on one of the biggest sites, I really like a bunch of the stuff Zach does. He's maybe the best just pure storyteller that, of all Cleveland media, like finding a story of a player and telling it. And recently he told one about Ramirez, about how he came from he grew up in Bonnie, Dominican Republic. He was a kid who quit school at 14 to pursue a major league dreams, which if you think about that, quitting school at 14 and then making it most of the way to the majors and being told you're too small the whole way, maybe I can see why he blocked us if we've ever mentioned his size, because I can't imagine quitting school at 14 years old and then being told you're not going to be able to make it the whole way there and then kind of shoving it in everybody's face when you do get there and be so great. So I can't blame it all for that. But Ramirez is just on fire right now as in terms of playing and popularity, and he's one of the most fun players at the All-Star game. He's got his face on shirts. I recently got one of them. I got the Yes Way Jose one, and that's a really neat shirt. He's also on coffee, apparently. I don't know if it's related, but he said he kept getting thrown on the bases because he drank too much coffee as a joke, and now his face is apparently the name, or is either name or face or something is on coffee, which makes sense. That's a good brand to go after. His parents are going to be with him in Miami for the All-Star game. It's the first time he'll be seeing them since the beginning of the season, which is the big thing about players in different countries. They don't always get to see their family, so it's nice that Jose will for that. And it just seems like so far lately, there's been this kind of player in Cleveland almost every year. It was Lindor last year, Jose this year, and sort of Zimmer this year, and in a couple years it's going to be probably Tristan McKenzie, Francisco Mejia, but it's just a nice time in Cleveland to have all these exciting, young, fun players coming up, so it's really nice. And I don't think Jose came out quite as much of nowhere as some people like to think. There were a lot of scouts that saw something in him coming up, but it was always just his size, and he's proved everyone wrong. And Zach Mizell's piece is a really nice story about how Jose came from, I mean, basically nothing as a 14-year-old kid quitting school to an all-star and one of the Indians' best players. And if he keeps playing the way he is, a legitimate MVP candidate. It's, I want to see Jose Ramirez win an MVP. That would be the best thing ever. So I'm really happy for Jose. It was a really great story by Zach. And so what do you think about Jose? Are you, I assume you're a big fan, I would hope.
Yeah. I mean, he's like, frankly, looking, you know, this year and last year, so the last season and a half, he's been the Indians' best position player. He's been better than Lindor. You know, which I think is partially, you know, Lindor is not, he's doing fine, but he's not doing as well as he did last year. And then Ramirez was better than I think a lot of people remember last year or realized last year, just because maybe because of Lindor, or, you know, the pitching staff got a lot of attention. You know, it takes a while for Lindor sort of arrived in the postseason, I think. And Ramirez hasn't sort of arrived quite that way yet. I don't think most Indians fans even realize it. But last year and a half, Ramirez, best position player on the team.
Are you saying Ramirez hasn't arrived like that yet or back then?
I'm saying yet. Yeah. I mean, I think he made the All-Star, which is something. And, you know, he won the vote. But I think, you know, partially third base doesn't have, you know, a standout guy that, like, fans are more aware of. But, no, I mean, like, Lindor, I feel like at this point – is a Major League Baseball star player. And I don't mean in terms of quality. I mean in terms of just like perception and, you know, fan awareness. And Jose Ramirez doesn't have that.
He's at least there on the Cleveland level, I think.
Yeah.
Which is but the next step, isn't it?
I mean, Lindor is the team's biggest star this decade, I think. And, you know, Ramirez might get there. But I think for Lindor, a lot of that was the postseason last year. Hopefully the Indians get to the World Series again, and Ramirez has the opportunity to enter that same club of super well-known popular guys.
Yeah, and as far as the All-Star voting went, he was down like 2,000 votes within less than a week to go, and he overcame it. So that was mostly Indians fans, obviously, but it was neat that he came back from so far so quickly. And he came over Miguel Sano, which, by the way, this week – We're forced to not watch baseball because the players think they need a break. Those darn slackers. They're getting paid money. They should be entertaining me all the time, 24/7. But they're going to take an all-star break. There's a home run derby tonight. From what I saw, I think Aaron Judge hit one 500 feet. Giancarlo Stanton hit a couple windows, but he was out in the first round. Before we get to the actual all-star game, what do you think of the home run derby? Are you a big fan of that, or do you wish it would kind of go away? And ESPN's pushing it really hard, especially with their broadcast now. They are very fake excited about it.
I feel like last year, I think it was last year, they implemented like a new system where instead of like a number of swings, it was a clock. Mm-hmm. It felt much, I had sort of lost interest in it, which, you know, was partially just getting older, partially being sick of Chris Berman, so sick of Chris Berman.
Back.
But last year, Stanton hit like 61 home runs. And because it was a clock instead of just like a number of pitches, there's no reason to take pitches anymore. It just felt like it moved more quickly. Stanton did, got a lot of attention, but it was the first time I'd really enjoyed the home run derby in a long time. And tonight with putting my daughter to bed and stuff like that, I haven't seen very much of it. I have it on now, and Aaron Judge is capable of hitting the ball very far, very frequently. That's what I can tell you from the last few minutes of home run derby viewing tonight.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never really been into it. I don't even hate Chris Berman. I kind of like Chris Berman, which I probably shouldn't say in a live broadcast. But
definitely, you shouldn't have said that.
I don't know why. I guess I think it's because it was the kind of thing where he's like, you hear him as a kid, so you kind of tolerate him as an adult. But I don't know. I've never really been into it, but I also don't think it's for me. I think it's mostly like for kids and I get adults too, I guess. But I mean, I think it's mostly for kids. Like they get excited about seeing the home runs. Because I was sitting there watching it with my 5-year-old. It was really neat. Today was just like the. It wasn't even a game. It was just the All-Star. What they call it? Like interviews a bunch of players, and every player that come up, you ask who they are, and he knows a bunch of logos from cards already. So it was neat explaining that to him. And when you're a kid, even if you have access to all this information, seeing players, it's still neat to see them all come together and play each other. Because I specifically remember I used to watch the Pro Bowl a lot as a kid, because it was after the season. It was like the end of football, and they would have skills competitions. You could see your favorite players as kind of being people and not always playing. That's one of the things I liked as a kid. And then they took it away because a bunch of adults didn't like the fact that they were just doing skills competitions. And that was when I stopped watching the Pro Bowl and eventually football altogether. That was kind of the start of it, I guess. But I like the minor stuff in baseball and seeing a bunch of players coming together and playing. And I think it's good for kids and getting people into the game. Even if the ESPN broadcast, the Home Run Derby, is so fake enthusiasm, they're all falling over their chairs every time there's a home run, like they weren't expecting to see it, which is kind of annoying. But Aaron Judge crushing baseballs is fun.
I don't know how you can say that and also say you kind of like Chris Berman. Like,
Oh,
Chris Berman was the worst for all of that, and him no longer being a part of the broadcast is a big reason
no,
it's
they
fun.
are. You haven't watched it. They are insane. They're crazy people right now. If you measured it, I'm pretty sure they're louder than Chris Berman was. Like the whole
Chris
group of them
Berman,
are just yelling and jumping up and down every time
I don't
there's a
know if
home
I've
run.
ever recovered from you saying you like Chris Berman.
I said I can tolerate him. I might have said I like him, but I don't love him. I just sort of like Chris Berman. I don't know. It's because I always used to watch the Sunday night foot or Sunday night count or Sunday morning countdown whenever he did on ESPN as a kid, and it just kind of stuck. And I don't know. Don't judge me, Jason.
Sorry, you've been judged.
But Aaron Judged. Hell, the weird thing about Aaron Judge, everybody talks about how giant he is, and there's all these jokes, and then I look and I realize I'm an inch taller than him. So like, I am not giant human. I'm completely normal sized. What are you talking about? I'm only six eight.
Raises the question of why don't you have 31 home runs?
That's all it takes is height, right? That's all you need. There's nothing else in baseball. Just be big and swing really hard, and you're good. The problem was I only played basketball in school, and then I barely played that. Then I tried football and hated it. I never even considered baseball. Because when you're giant, it's not a good sport to play. When it doesn't, like, nobody asked you in high school to play baseball when you're a giant. It's always basketball and football. I don't know. It's weird. Anyway, on to the actual All-Star game. Jose Ramirez, like we said, he was voted in, overcame a 200,000 vote deficit to win with a week left. He beat out Miguel Sano, and even though Sano has more home runs, might be the more exciting player if you go by that alone. But Jose leads AL third baseman in essentially everything. WRC plus, he has 157, leads all AL third baseman in every aspect of a slash line, average on base percentage slugging. He leads everything. So it wasn't even close. Jose is the better third baseman. He should have been in there. I also think it's important to note that this won't be forever. Manny Machado still exists, and he's still a third baseman for the Baltimore Orioles. He's just really bad this year. So it's good that this is the year Jose took off and won the vote, because I don't know if he will get it another chance if Machado stays in the AL. Although he is a free agent after this year, or after next year, so maybe he goes to the NL and then Jose Ramirez is the undisputed best third baseman in the AL. I don't know. But joining him in Miami is Michael Brantley, Francisco Lindor, Andrew Miller. And Corey Kluber is technically was going to be the starter, but he pitched on Sunday, thankfully, so he won't pitch in the All-Star game. Are you looking forward to that, Jason? Seeing all those, at least one Indians player.
The Home Run Derby, I enjoyed last year, but I could take it or leave it. I watched almost none of it tonight and don't particularly. But the All-Star game, I legitimately love. I think I've probably, there's probably somewhere a year in there when for some reason I couldn't. I was infatuated with some girl who wanted to go do something stupid the night of the All-Star game or something. But like, as best I can recall, I've watched the All-Star game every year since I was like 7 years old and legitimately love the All-Star game, even though there's a lot of stuff that's stupid about it.
So, are you a fan of taking away the fact that the win doesn't count anymore, or do you like it just so it's its own thing?
No, like I thought that was one of my least favorite All-Star game things ever was tying home field in the World Series. So, because it was,
pointless. This kind of word.
yeah, not pointless, but misguided and distracted from just letting the game be a collection of the best baseball players in the world all in one game, and it shouldn't need anything extra to give it any oomph.
Yeah, I think you might have mentioned this before, maybe last year when we talked about the All-Star game, but baseball's like one of the best sports that you can still, it's still fun if you're not going maximum effort. Like football, that's crap if you're not going maximum effort. Hockey's not. Basketball just is, I guess basketball might be fun, but baseball is still good if you're not going full effort. You can still hit really far and have exciting pitches and have exciting plays, even if you're not.
But like, and frankly, I don't even know if it's that as much as just like they basically can still go full effort because there's not the same injury risk. Like in football, you're out of your mind to play as hard as you can in a game that doesn't count for anything, that you're not, you know, like it can only really harm you. You know, in basketball, to some extent, the same thing. The NBA All-Star game is like sort of fun just because it's like watching a video game for 3.5 quarters. And then if it's close, they all suddenly take it seriously for the last few minutes, and that's neat. the Pro Bowl, I think, I mean, it's probably been 20 years since I watched a Pro Bowl, but the Pro Bowl was never my thing. But yeah, I feel like baseball All-Star game just feels like a regular baseball game in terms of like effort and strategy and execution, except for like the fact that the best players don't stay in the whole game. But I don't know. I love the All-Star game. I know it has plenty of critics and they're welcome to not like it. I'm too old to care if people don't like the things I like. I love the All-Star game.
I like it enough. And I like that my kids are going to be able to watch it and see a bunch of players come together and play each other. That's always neat. That's as much as I care about liking it. I'll still watch it. It's not like a terrible thing to watch. So I'm all for it. Did you see, I think it was Bryce Harper, he wanted to change it so they do the whole stupid, who all does it now? Hockey does it, basketball, I think basketball might do it, but where you pick teams instead of just doing AL versus NL. That's an awful idea. I hate that. I don't want that. I want AL versus NL. That's the cool part about it for me is that it's two leagues, the best players fighting each other, not just picking random players and slapping them together.
If I had my way, the All-Star game would be the way it is, and we'd get rid of interleague play so that the World Series and the All-Star game were the only time the two leagues met.
That'd be cool.
That's how it was when I was a kid, and nothing should be different than when I was.
Absolutely nothing. The biggest point that Bryce Harper brought up was, wouldn't it be cool to see Clayton Kershaw against Justin Turner? Well, it's also cool to see Clayton Kershaw against AL hitters. I don't care if he faces his own teammate. It's fun to see him against other good players. I don't know. That idea is stupid, and I hate it, and I don't want it. I don't know. It's just not an All-Star game anymore. It's just a random gimmick to try to get people to watch it. Bad idea. Yeah. So, Jason, I think that's all for our regular lineup stuff. We have a ton of questions today, so it's kind of good we got through everything kind of quick. As always, on Monday, we'll ask you guys for questions on Facebook, Twitter, or if you want to be one of the first people to email sbnletsgotribe@gmail.com, you are more than welcome. We will find your question one way or another, and we will answer it. So yeah, that first one, Mark Sheffleton on Facebook, he wants to know, is there a disconnect between the bullpen's ERA and their effectiveness? They've been a big strength, and it seems like there's always been, or there has been several games lately given up by the bullpen. I think my answer for this is just the difference between perception and reality. They're really good, and bullpens tend to blow games once in a while. That's just what happens. The Indians have the best ERA and best FIP, their bullpen, in all of the majors, so they're good. I don't know what you people want.
Well, what you said about perception, that's, I mean, because I feel like the question is sort of saying, yeah, their ERA and their FIP and stuff like that are really good, but they're blowing games, but they're not blowing games. I mean, the Indians have 3 blown saves all season, which is not only the fewest in baseball, the next fewest blown saves is 8. So they have 5 fewer blown saves than any other team. And I realize a blown save isn't the only way for a bullpen not to be great, you know, like giving up a lead, losing a lead, or I mean, there are other things. But the bullpen is both good by statistics like ERA and FIP and good at not blowing leads. I think it's just blown leads stand out in fans' heads, and Indians fans are paying so much more attention to the Indians than any other team that they don't have any context for what's going on there. The fact is the Indians bullpen is really good by like every metric, including not blowing leads.
That's the big one, context. It's really hard to get context for a bullpen because you only really focus on when it goes wrong. In the Indians' bullpen also, they're the 5th fewest innings pitched, so I guess maybe there's more perception warping there, the fact that they're used the less and or the least, and when they blow it, it looks more frequent? I don't know, but the bullpen is really good. There is no, they have a good ERA, but somehow they're blowing games, like you said. They're good at ERA, and they're good at not screwing up. Mike Voorhees on Facebook, he wants to know, what do you attribute to our success against a stud like Verlander? but trials against lesser Tiger pitchers. As far as Verlander goes, I'm usually not one to speculate on like the mental aspect of players, but it seems like the Indians are just very, very far into Justin Verlander's head. There's the whole always claiming the Indians are stealing pitches thing, and I cannot find it, but I know I looked it up before. I kind of skimmed over it before we recorded, but if you look like down Jason or Justin Verlander's starts, you'll see ERAs of like 3-2-4-0, and then there's like 9-8-7 when you get to Cleveland. Like his only bad, disastrous games are against Cleveland. It's not like he just has a couple bad ones. He had a good one on Sunday, on Saturday when the Tigers still lost, but he was great. But for the most part, the Indians just, I don't know, I think they're in his head. Or if maybe the Indians are stealing pitches, that could be a thing. And I'm perfectly fine with that because that's just a thing that happens. But maybe Verlander is just the one pitcher who's not capable of changing him. I don't know. Maybe he just doesn't like changing him because he feels like they shouldn't be stealing signs, so I'm not going to change. And maybe that's why he gets hit so hard. I don't know. But there is really something about the Indians pounding Jason or Justin Verlander. They do it all the time. Like his only bad games over his whole career have been against Cleveland. Not just like the 4 or 5 year Verlander, like the 8 and 9 runs allowed
games. Bad games of his career are against Cleveland.
It's like an overwhelmingly amount of his. I'm not saying like just barely bad games. Like he allowed 4 runs in 5. Like his 9-8 ERA game. There are several against Cleveland.
Yeah, no, the Indians have definitely hit him well, and I think usually like player versus player or player versus team matchups, I don't worry too much about. But Verlander's been pitching against the Indians for a long time. He has like 2 seasons worth of games against the Indians at this point. So there's no small sample to it. The Indians have had a lot of success. The other part of the question, as compared to other Tigers or, you know, lesser pitchers in general, that I think for the most part is just selective memory. I think that's something where like a nobody, you know, pitches well against the Indians and it stands out because it seems unexpected. Whereas when the Indians hit a nobody, it doesn't stand out because it's what you expected and you forget all about it. Verlander aside, because, you know, whatever it is, the Indians do hit him and have for a long time really well. The Indians had good games against Chris Sale, and people were like, oh, I'd rather face Chris Sale than, no, for the most part, non-Verlander, I'd much rather face the nobody than the generally great pitcher.
I'd rather face Verlander. I don't know. I don't feel like the Indians had anything on Chris Sale. That felt like luck. I'm going by feel here, which is a very good analytical thing to go by, I know, but I don't know. I just feel like the Indians, like, they're screwing with Jason Verlander somehow. He doesn't not like facing them. He always complains about them. I don't know. There's something there. I just like how much they mess with him because he's such a whiner in general. One of the games you missed, by the way, I don't know if you saw, but there was a light that bothered the Tigers. It was in one of the suites behind home plate. They actually had to stop the game and call up the suite and tell them to shut the light off because it bothered Ian Kinsler. Like, the Tigers, there's something every single time. There was the wedding ring with Brian Shaw. There's, of course, the sign stealing, and now there's a light in a suite that bothered him too much. That could also be coincidence that it's just the Tigers
are an old team, and old people are easily bothered.
That's clearly it. Anthony, did I get the right question? No, Anthony Mollison on Facebook. He wants to know, why did the Indians allow David Ross in the ballpark last night? You told me before the podcast that you, I can't remember exact words, but you don't like the fact, or you don't like David Ross, I guess. So I'm just going to back up and let you go on this one.
Well, like, David Ross was a fine backup catcher in the major leagues. Like, that's cool. Like, I mean, if that had been the outcome of my life, I'd have been pretty stoked with that. Like, I'm not trying to denigrate what he's done with himself. But in the grand scheme of major league baseball players, he was like a nobody. And other than the fact that it means the Indians lost the World Series, I think my least favorite thing about the Cubs winning the World Series is David Ross retired and has somehow become like this mythic folk hero in Chicago, where I live, and apparently around the country, because he's everywhere. And I never need to see David Ross on my TV again. Like, show me Ron Karkovice or some other capable backup catcher. I don't need David Ross. There's nothing. He's not special. I'm tired of David Ross.
I hope he listens to this podcast. I really hope David Ross, for several reasons, I hope David Ross listens to this podcast. But as a counter,
I'm sure he's a really nice guy. Like, he seems like he was a great teammate. Like, I don't want to dislike David Ross. I never disliked him when he was playing. Like,
the Dancing with the Stars and constantly on like ESPN and MLB Network and all this stuff, like, let's slow it down. We're not talking about a Hall of Famer here. We're talking about a solid backup catcher who happened to be on a team that hadn't won the World Series for over 100 years.
I feel like if there's always a player on the team like that when there's a World Series winner, if they retire afterwards.
I think you're right, and it's just because it's the Cubs, it's just been magnified so much more.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's magnified always. Remember, like, Jerome Bettis when the Steelers won, and I'm sure there were more. That's always the first one that comes to mind, because I grew up around the Steelers.
Jerome Bettis was like a Pro Bowler. Jerome Bettis was like a great
football. Yeah, I guess that isn't a perfect comparison. Well, it's not a perfect comparison, but there's always that retiring player who is just blown out of proportion because he won a World Series in his last year, and it's really annoying, especially, like you said, when it's a player who was inconsequential for 99% of the time. But I will say, in the booth, he wasn't bad.
Living in Chicago, I'm sure, makes it worse, because I'm sure I'm exposed to stuff that I lived in Cleveland or anywhere but Chicago I maybe wouldn't see. But a lot of it's national stuff, too. And I don't need – I need like a 5-year ban on David Ross stuff.
No, it's definitely national, though. I'm in New York, and I've seen way too much David Ross. Like, baseball has a problem with getting faces out there, but I know exactly what David Ross looks like. Which is seems like the opposite of what it should be.
You want to know are what retired backup catchers look like.
Way to go, baseball. You did it. But I will say, in the booth, he wasn't bad. I didn't mind him. Once he got past talking about his heroics in Game 7, and his dramatic, if Rajai Davis would have caught that ball, I don't want to hear that. But he wasn't that bad. He came, researched stuff. He had nice anecdotes. He seemed to know what was going on.
I don't dislike him. He seems like a likable, good person. But...
I just don't want to see about him dancing anymore. That's pretty much over that. Blake Rain on Twitter, at Blake Rain. He wants to know, more likely to have been Indian in 2019, Brantley or Chisenhall? I believe they're both free agents after 2018. I know Chisenhall is. I can't remember if Brantley is. Yeah, because Brantley has an option.
Have an option for next year. So assuming the Indians pick up their option, then yes, they'll both be out of team control after 2018, unless there's an extension.
And at this point, we know Brantley's going to have his option picked up, I'm sure.
Yeah. I think Chisenhall is, I think, 2 years younger. I think, you know, by the time Brantley gets that point, he'll be like 32, which isn't old. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I don't know. That's a stupid thing to say. I don't know. Because it goes without saying, but...
I know for sure.
It's I feel gonna like be. Brantley's likely to be a little more expensive, but not necessarily to project to be any better. I feel like it's more likely that Chisenhall can be re-signed for less money as more of like a, you know, some sort of role player. You know, I don't think either of them is getting a huge payday. And if Brantley keeps doing what he's doing this season and stays healthy, maybe he does. Although going back to the All-Star game, I think one of the signs that the Indians have arrived in the national scene is the fact that they have All-Stars who don't deserve to be All-Stars. Usually, you know, that's teams like the Yankees, the Cubs who have like no one on the All-Star team, I think, except for Wade Davis, which is incredible. But usually, I don't feel like the Indians are getting extra All-Stars, but Michael Brantley should not be on the All-Star team.
No, not at all.
And while I think Lindor is completely appropriate, because I think the All-Star game should be more than just the last 3 months. If you do go by just the last 3 months, Lindor doesn't really deserve to be on the All-Star team either. So I think the fact that the Indians are getting guys in the team who maybe don't deserve it, I think is a sign that they're not being overlooked anymore. So that's, I guess, cool.
Yeah, because even they weren't only Jose Ramirez obviously won the fan vote, but the rest of them were all really close. At one point, there were several leading. I think Lindor led by a lot. Edwin led. Brantley was like third for outfielder. So there was a point where the Indians had somebody. I think even Yan Gomes was up there for catcher. So Indians fans are representing and voting, and that also means like non-Indians fans are getting there voting too. So it's a good judge of how nationally known the Indians are, which is cool. So the next one, at Ricky Howe 16, he wants to know, what should be the Indians' prime focus come the trade deadline? We agreed we're going to talk about mostly about the deadline in the next episode, but we can kind of, because it's coming up. There's no way to avoid it anymore. So, Jason, what do you think their main focus is going to be?
Like, this is like the least satisfying answer there is, but I just don't feel like there's like something to really go after, because the biggest weakness on the team in terms of like a position is catcher, but they've got two catchers signed for like another 3 years.
and their best prospect is a catcher. It doesn't really make any sense to trade for a catcher.
Yep.
You know, I guess if Kipnis were going to be out for the year or something like that, then maybe you look for an upgrade at second base. But if Kipnis is going to be back in, you know, 3 or 4 weeks, then that doesn't make any sense. Like, every team could use another starting pitcher, I suppose. But I just don't see, despite the Indians being semi-mediocre so far, I just don't see, like, the glaring weakness that you go out to fix. What about you?
Yeah, the same thing. Because their mediocrity is not that the players are all bad. It's that they can't score. Like, they have – like, there's no – you're not going to find an upgrade, really, on the trade market. Like, who are you going to upgrade even in the outfield? I guess you could sort of want to – you know, I guess J.D. Martinez if you want to upgrade right field. But even then, is that really that big of enough leap over Lonnie Chisenhall and whoever else goes over there with him? Center fielder, obviously, Bradley Zimmer's in there now.
Legitimate upgrades available. But those are the kind of guys who are going to cost you, like – two of your top 3 or 4 prospects. And I certainly don't want to see them trading away, you know, say Mejia, who they tried to trade away for LaCroix last year. And oh my God, like, we should all love Jonathan LaCroix for being a trade. Like, that's one, LaCroix has turned into total garbage. And two, the Indians almost gave away a guy who on a lot of lists is now one of the top 10 prospects in baseball.
Yeah. Number 3 on Baseball Perspective.
Yeah. So I don't want, there's no one I want them trading him away for, because Gomes and Perez do not look like they should be the Indians catcher much longer. So I'd say, you know, if he is ready, you know, midseason, next season, he becomes the Indians catcher.
Do you call him untouchable at this point, or is just, I don't know, unless you can obviously rule out like extremely lopsided trades, but
yeah, I'd say he's untouchable barring a trade offer that I can't fathom happening. Right, so, that's what I'm putting,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, if the Yankees are like, oh, we'll give you Aaron Judge for him, well, then sure. But
we'll do that. Just do it quickly.
There's no plausible trade offer involving Mejia that I would want the Indians to lose him at this point. And I'm...
Yeah, it's the Indians are in a really weird spot because they're good enough to win, and there's nothing you can upgrade immediately. And as far as somebody who runs a website based around getting clicks around the trade deadline, it's really unfortunate that there's no... they're not linked to anybody. There's no reason for them to be linked to anybody. If I'm going to do anything about the trade deadline, is just essentially saying, in some weird world, this is what they can do, because there's nothing. A bullpen arm, maybe, but their bullpen is the best. I don't know. Like a fifth starter, if they don't believe in Trevor Bauer or Josh Tomlin, but that's not exciting. They also have Sean Morimondo, so if you have to trade anything for anybody, you're basically losing the value, because you're not going to get a huge, massive upgrade compared to what you're trading away.
Yeah, that's really how I feel.
Yeah. And also with Francisco Mejia, there's another catcher. I think his first name is Eric Haas. He's been really good lately, so the Indians might have 2 good catchers coming up soon. Or not soon, but in the next couple of years. So this means we're going to have to watch Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez for at least another year or two. Are we doomed to that fate?
I think Mejia, like, you know, 12 months from now could potentially be up. If he keeps playing as well as he has, and Gomes and Perez don't turn things around, I think he could be up a year from now. That wouldn't match the Indians' normal sort of MO with their best prospects, but most of the core should be together for the next 3 years. If you've got, I don't think there's any reason to hold your best prospect back.
You know, there's a service time thing, which is why he wouldn't be up on opening day. Mm-hmm. But I think beyond the service time thing, I don't think next year would be too early if the second half of this year is like the first half for those 3 catchers.
Yeah, the only thing with, I think as far as I know, the only thing he's developing now is his defense, which I don't know is that, if his offense is good enough next year, can you let it slide that maybe he's still developing on defense? Maybe. I mean, if he can hit like he can in Double-A in the majors, then absolutely, but there's going to be a drop-off somewhere. So you just kind of have to know, like, where his offense is going to overwhelm his developing defense. Because there's a range of, he's either sort of bad on defense or he's really bad on defense. I don't know yet. He has a really good arm, but everything else he's struggling with is, as far as I know, which I'm not a scout or anything. Our next question, at JamesCags24. He wants to know your favorite Cleveland sports talk radio show, Jason. I know you go home and you tune in that ESPN, The Score, and listen to whatever. No.
Not living in or near Cleveland, I can't say I've ever listened to a Cleveland sports talk radio show. So
I will
defer to your New York listening.
Well, for a while there, when I first started, when I had a job where I sat in an office all day and I was trying to look for things to listen to, I did listen to Eddie's XM radio, and you could get the like ESPN Anywhere, basically. I listened to the Cleveland one. It felt like it was awful, but I didn't know of any alternatives. So I listened to them for a while, and it was bad. But there are really good podcasts out there based around the Indians or Cleveland sports in general. One of my favorites is the A to Z podcast with Andre Knott, who's especially good because there's a lot of really neat behind-the-scenes stuff with the Indians because he's always interacting with them, obviously, as the SDO broadcast guy. And he'll tell you a bunch of things about the Indians and about just being in the locker room. It's a really neat perspective. I mean, obviously, if you're hardcore into stats and that's all you care about, you probably won't like it. But as far as the Indians as people and players, it's really neat to see their mindset of things. That's a really underrated one. And there's also like the guys over at Waiting for Next Year. They do a bunch of good podcasts. So there is a lot of good stuff to listen to. If you just like Cleveland Twitter stuff, there's McNeil Show, which is new, which is neat. Hipster Tito, the guy who did the Party of Napoli sign, and he's really fun on Twitter. He has his own show, too. So there's a bunch popping up. I'm sure it's also just because I don't listen to teams anywhere else, but it seems like Cleveland has a bunch of good podcasts and websites. There's a bunch of good Cleveland stuff. So if you're a Cleveland fan, there's a lot of stuff to listen to and read. Just don't listen to ESPN Radio. Just don't. There's no reason to. You have infinite alternatives that you could fill up an entire day instead of listening to that. Do you listen to any podcasts, by the way, Jason, baseball or otherwise?
I listen to Jonah Carey's podcast, which is baseball and otherwise. Not every week. But no, I don't listen to, and I realize as a co-host of a podcast, that's a weird and maybe bad thing to say. I don't know. But no, I don't listen to a ton of podcasts. Like my wife and I sometimes, like when we're like, you know, we've got like a long drive, we'll put on, she's got some on her phone and she'll load up like the Freakonomics ones and stuff like that. But unless it's a long car ride, like I know a lot of people listen to podcasts when they're running and stuff like that. I don't.
Yeah, I don't listen to a ton either. I do listen. I mean, I listen to once in a while. The one baseball one the most is Effectively Wild, which is really good.
Yeah, I sometimes listen to that one. It's true. That is a really good one.
Yeah, Jeff Sullivan and Michael Bauman, they're really good. But yeah, I can't like, I know people say they listen to them while they're working or whatever, but if I'm doing anything requiring the slightest amount of thinking, I can't have something talking that I want to listen to.
Yeah.
Because I'll focus. Like, I can have a random baseball game on in the background or TV shows, but it's like a podcast where I know they're discussing stuff I would be interested in. I always have to listen to it, and it distracts me. So the hard part is just finding time to listen to it. And usually if I'm, like, just sitting down to do something, I'd also want to watch. So I don't want to, like, stare at a screen of just the logo. So it's a weird thing. Our last question comes from Jalilis. He wants to know, Jose's Twitter, origin of Mr. LaPara, and how does a guy who speaks no English have such clever, nuanced English language tweets? So the Mr. LaPara thing, I actually asked Joel, who's been on the podcast, who runs the Cleveland Indians Twitter, if he knew he was going to reach out to Jose's translator, but she wasn't around. So I don't know. I have no idea. We almost had a scoop, Jason. We were this close, but it didn't happen. So if anybody does know, I mean, Google didn't say anything. LaPara translates to four. So unless he means Mr. Four, I don't think that's what he was going for. But I have no idea. And as far as the English language tweets, there is a conspiracy theory that Jose Ramirez can speak perfect English, but he's hiding it from us all. He kind of leaks it out to Andre Knott in postgame interviews and stuff as a joke, but I think most likely he's just a clever, funny guy, and he just tells them to his translator or someone else, and they put in the Twitter for him, because he does seem like a smart guy who's really funny in general. So I would not doubt at all that he's the one saying those things one way or another, and somebody else is typing it for him in English. Maybe like adjusting it so it's funnier on Twitter or something, but I don't think it's just like somebody, a PR person, tweeting for Jose, because I think he just has that much personality in him. Because I don't know if he follows Twitter, Jason, but he's great.
Yep, I'm familiar.
But it is your fault that he blocked us, so maybe you don't know.
It's not my fault that he blocked us.
I really wish we could know exactly why. We know a general timeline or a general reason, but I guess we'll never know. He unblocked us. That's the important thing. So, Jason, anything else fun happened or happening in the baseball world or in just the Lucart world?
No, I'm going to watch and enjoy the All-Star game tomorrow. And I know generally, and I used to complain about the day without any baseball, but frankly, at this point in my life, as busy as I am, I can use like a day to catch up on stuff before the second half starts. I would also, you talked about there's a lot of good stuff to watch, to listen to read. Dave Cameron at Fangraphs, All-Star Week is always the week he does his trade value series, which is a great read. Top 50 players, 10 a day. So that started today. Lindor is going to be high on that. Ramirez is going to be high on that. Kluber is going to be on it. Carrasco might be on it. So there'll be a lot for Indians fans. But just baseball in general, it's a well thought out, well written series. So if you're looking for something to do while there's not much baseball the next few days, pop by Fangraphs and check out the trade value series.
That's all well and good. I'll be playing Crash Bandicoot, Jason.
I've got too many questions to ask them all.
Oh, you do know what Crash Bandicoot is, don't you?
I know, yes. I'm okay. Familiar with Crash Bandicoot.
You know that there was they remastered the game, and it's all shiny now.
And you were a grown-up, so...
The game is shiny. It's new, Jason. There's stuff to jump over. It's great. And one other thing, I was visiting family this weekend, too. And to someone in Chicago, I wonder, is a Michael Jordan collection anything? Because my dad, he pulled out these two giant totes of plates and cards, like all meticulously sleeved and all these signed things. I think some of them were from QVC, so not really signed by Michael Jordan. But I imagine in Chicago, there's a ton of people that collect Michael Jordan stuff. But I don't know anybody who's obsessed with Michael Jordan like my dad was, and it was really cool. Is that a thing in Chicago that just everybody still loves Jordan?
Yeah, no, definitely.
I imagine there was so much memorabilia made that...
At no point in the last 30 years... could you have gone to a Bulls game and see fans wearing more jerseys of a player other than Jordan? Like, Jordan hasn't played for the Bulls for almost 20 years, and at no point in those 20 years have there ever been more Derrick Rose or whoever jerseys at a Bulls game than there are still Jordan jerseys.
Isn't that partially because they haven't had anybody getting the jersey?
He was the number one pick and MVP. Like, you don't get much bigger than that. And he was from Chicago. Like,
oh, yeah, Derrick Rose was MVP. I forgot about that.
But, I mean, other than Rose, yeah, you could say, like, that's a valid point. but no, Jordan is definitely still the man in Chicago. And I can't really fathom a time when he's not. Like, Chicago still loves Mike Ditka, who was probably a pretty crummy football coach who happened to coach a fantastic football team.
Yeah.
And he's still popular. So Michael Jordan, arguably the best American athlete ever, is probably always going to be the man in Chicago.
And one thing I don't even want to look up is that my dad owned like a pair of the first series of Jordans, but he just wore them every day to work and everywhere. So they were destroyed and eventually threw them away. I don't even want to look up how much those might be worth now. But he does have a Chicago Bulls coat, a windbreaker, in perfect condition. So I don't know. Maybe that'll he can retire off that. Because yeah. I'm sure those are rare.
Windbreakers are popular, almost yeah. as popular as Jordan.
Anyway, that's enough Chicago Bulls talk. Jason, thanks for joining me, as always, on the podcast. And everyone
Until
else.
Next week.
Yep, we will talk to you then. We're probably going to preview a bunch of the second half, trade deadline, all kinds of fun stuff. So, see you then, everybody.